I'm Stephen Mangan. Welcome to The Confessional. If you've ever listened to this series before, you'll know that each week I hurry into this booth out of the rain to take the confession of an unsuspecting celebrity penitent. If you haven't, now you do. My guest has agreed to tell me three of their darker secrets, stories that make them cringe, shudder, or blush. That's enough exposition. It's time to meet this week's guest. My penitent today is a comedian, writer, and actor who was born in Croydon but did her first gig in Chester on the theory that if it went badly, she was so far from home, no one would know her. If you ever go to Chester, do enjoy the immense city walls they've built to stop her getting back in. I think this is also the first guest we've had who's part of a showbiz couple. She and her husband, Justin Edwards, are 5'7½" on average, 11'3" in aggregate. She's 4'11" and from Croydon, he's 6'5" and from Hampshire. However you look at it, she married up. One of the most open and instantly likeable performers in comedy, she's a very honest comedian who isn't afraid to say more than maybe she should. She's also prone to ear infections, a fact I read in an interview with The Independent, who had asked, "How was your journey?" This should be fun because this show is nothing without oversharing. A very warm welcome to Lucy Porter.
Oh, I love that introduction. It had everything. It had flattery, which is the main thing I enjoyed, okay. And it had maths, and it had a little bit of a nod to my ear infections, which is...
How are they? How are your ears?
Oh, a constant trauma, Stephen. I have been trying to get fit by swimming.
That's not probably the best sport if you have ear infections,
no,
is it?
No, very much so. Apart from... ear darts or maybe deep sea diving actually probably is the worst thing you can do.
The worst.
But yeah, pretty bad.
Lucy, are you comfortable with confession? Did it play any part of your upbringing at all?
It sure did. So my mother and father were incredibly devout Catholics and raised me in the faith. And
we've really found a lot of Catholics for this series. It's good. The beacon has gone out.
Well, I suppose we are willing to do this because it's in our nature and we've trained for this. I mean, I've trained for this show, Stephen.
Are you here to confess seriously, or is this are you here for a bit of a laugh, or how are you treating today?
Well, I am here to confess gratefully. Because when I was younger, I was like, all organised religion is terrible. And now I'm middle-aged, I'm in favour of organised anything, as long as I don't have to organise it, quite frankly. And I think, because basically confession is free therapy, isn't it? You get to sit in a room and talk about yourself.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm looking forward to today, is actually I'm taking it very seriously and I'm very much looking forward to it.
Okay. In an ideal world, we'd actually be sitting on either side of one of those little confessional grills in a booth scented with, you know, incense and beeswax.
Oh, lovely.
But currently impossible for obvious reasons. So we'll have to conjure up a confessional box of our imagination. So what are you going to have? It could be a flowery dell, festooned with bluebells and sweet briar roses, or a flowery dell as in rhyming slang for a police cell. Where would you like to confess, Lucy?
I'd be more at home in the latter, I would say. Well, I tell you what, actually, since we were talking earlier about swimming, I think an ideal place for a confession would be in a sauna or steam room or Turkish bath of some description.
Okay.
Because I think I love a steam room, absolutely love a steam room, very good for clearing out, you know, your pores and everything. And
your ears indeed.
I think the steam sort of it just feels cleansing and also concealing. I could open my pores as I open my soul.
Love it. That's great. Okay, well, I'll crank up the central heating.
Yes. I'll pop my top off.
Yeah, we'll get into our towels.
I mean, we're in separate booths, so I literally could.
Right, Lucy Porter, time to spill the beans. Can we have our first confession, please?
Okay, well, I was a very well-behaved child. So the first bad thing I ever did, really, was not until I was 16 years old.
Okay.
So this is the story of my 16th birthday party. I'll set a bit of scene for you, Stephen. So at 16, I was best friends with a girl called Tracy Strange. Hello, Tracy. We're still in touch. And Tracy and I were part of the alternative scene in Croydon. Mm-hmm. So alternative, you know, alternative music. And in this case, an alternative to being popular. Anyway, so we thought we're going to have a 16th birthday party and we are going to make it an amazing party that will put us on the social map in the Croydon, Wallington, Sutton area, which was where we lived, and it's going to be amazing. So I booked the scout hut at my church, at St Alphege's Church, and we prepared for the party of the century. And we were going to invite like everyone, because obviously there was nothing worse than having a party that no one turned up to. But obviously when you invite everyone, then everyone tells everyone else.
Right.
And I had told my mum and dad, there is no need for you to make any kind of appearance at all, because we have merely invited our closest female friends and a few boys from the Catholic school who are largely training for the priesthood and have no interests in matters of the flesh. There will be no alcohol, because the terms of the scout hut hire very much said there'll be no alcohol and the party must be over by 10:30. Okay. So my mum and dad rather foolishly allowed my sister, Sally, who is 10 years older than me, to be the adult in charge at this party. And it all started absolutely fine. We got to about 9:30 and there were young people enjoying themselves, dancing. And then at about 9:30, Tracy had been going out with this boy and they had an argument. He called her by another girl's name. I know, right? And so this was obviously huge drama. So about 10 of us had to all go into the loos and discuss this and have a sort of summit. And then by the time we came back out, it was like a scene. Well, it was a scene from a movie. In fact, if it being the 80s, it would have been like
a Brat Pack
sort of
movie.
One of those where I would have been played by Rick Moranis. And Tracy would have been, I don't know, Judd Nelson or someone. And it just absolutely was carnage. Some boys had turned up, some bad boys had turned up on motorbikes and had carved up the lawn, the lovingly tended lawn outside the scout
hut. Wheelies and stuff.
Unbelievable tricks. And they had taken down all the flags, you know, like the ceremonial flags in the
scout flags.
Hut. Yep. It was like a church parade. It was like a satanic church parade.
Wow. Okay.
They were waving the flags around. There was just booze everywhere. I don't know. It just in a matter of minutes had turned from a sedate affair into this sort of bacchanal.
Animal house.
Yeah. My sister completely went to pieces. She had no authority as a 26-year-old. She had a couple of her mates. They were all a little bit tipsy as well. And so the police arrived and the police called my dad.
Oh, no.
My dad was a little bit older than most of my friends' parents. He was 50 when I was born. So at this time, he's 66 years old.
Right.
He's a pensioner.
Yeah.
And he had a shock of white hair, which he used to brawl cream down during the day.
Okay.
It's about 11 o'clock. So we're past the time we were meant to be there. And also we're past my dad's bedtime. So my dad was in bed. The police call him. He gets up.
The hair has sprung up.
The hair is furious.
Right.
And he is furious, and he was wearing, my dad used to wear a string vest.
Okay, this is good, good.
So he had his pyjamas and his string vest on in bed, and he put some trousers on over his pyjamas, but the trousers were not long enough to cover the whole of the pyjama, so he had a sort of flare of pyjama out the bottom of the trouser leg. Also, his flies were undone, just because why wouldn't they be?
Excellent.
And then he put his dressing gown on over the top.
The string vest.
Yeah. And he arrived. The other thing about my dad, of course, as well, is he was from Northern Ireland. He was from Belfast. And so he came down to disperse the party.
So I'm imagining, what's the guy in Back to the Future?
Yeah, Doc Brown.
It's Doc Brown from Back to the Future,
he's absolutely Doc Brown from Back to the Future, but with a very
angrier
Northern Irish accent and furious.
Right.
And I mean, the mortification. Obviously, everyone I knew and every boy I fancied and everyone I was interested in impressing was there. And my dad was standing screaming. I mean, in fairness, being Northern Irish in England in the 1980s, when he screamed, "You've got 10 minutes to get out," people did.
Yeah,
they did.
Carries a certain weight.
It certainly had a certain resonance. So, yeah, I was just mortified. I was sort of, I think the reason I want to confess to this is that I never apologised to my mum and dad, but principally to my dad or my sister.
Okay.
Because it was so obviously going to go wrong, and it was all about me just wanting to be popular. And my dad was so embarrassed, and you know, because the police, he was a local pharmacist, so the police kind of knew who he was, and he was mortified my sister was absolutely devastated, shaken for weeks.
For weeks?
Oh, yeah. I mean, she still can't hear sort of, you know, music of the 80s without
You Can
trembling.
Ring My Bell by Anita Ward sets her off.
Well, it was more sort of alternative gothy things.
Of course,
it was probably,
yes.
You know, Fields of the Nephilim or Sisters of Mercy.
Okay. Sister of No Mercy.
Yes.
You've mentioned many movies in the telling of it, but it really does have I've just got now a picture of all these 16-year-old moped riding lads and on one side doing a sort of Sharks and Jets kind of dance with the police on the other and your dad in between, furious,
flailing around
with a sort of wind machine blowing his dressing gown behind him.
Well, and there's also lots of little romantic subplots as well, because there's obviously Tracy and her boyfriend.
Yeah, did you have any love interest going on?
Oh, do you know, Stephen, there was a boy who was DJing.
Right.
And I mean, who doesn't love a DJ? And he was very cool. He was already cool. And I lent him all my records because he didn't have a lot of alternative stuff. He was a bit more kind of mainstream. So I lent him all my vinyl. And at the end of the night, in the confusion, not only did he not kiss me, and not only did we have the moment I dreamed of where he said, "Do you know what? I've never really appreciated just how special you are. But now I see I was wrong." He just scarpered in the confusion with all my vinyl, and I never saw it again.
With your vinyl?
Yep.
What a toad.
I know.
Wow.
It was a lesson. It was a bitter lesson. Don't go after cool boys. They will break your heart.
They will steal your vinyl.
Mm.
Well, Lucy, we're off to a cracking start, disturbing the peace. Do you feel better already getting that out?
I mean, I really do.
I really want to know if your sister, you know, wants to revisit this episode, because I think that's where the real healing needs to take place. It's like skins, but vests. I mean, you're disturbing the peace, your father out. It's all there. It's outstanding. Excellent. Well, I can't wait to hear your next confession. What have you got next for me?
Okay, well, we're staying in the realm of romantic disappointment.
Okay.
But we are moving fast forward to, I think this was in my early 30s, and it is the story of a date gone awry.
Excellent.
At this point in my life, I was very single and looking for love in all the wrong places. And in hindsight, this was a particularly dark period of my life, I think. I was adrift in London, sort of leading actually what was a relatively glamorous showbiz life from the outside. So it was like the time when I was in One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest with Christian Slater, West End star on the West End stage. Mm-hmm. So in my 30s, professionally, I was sort of doing all right. But personally, I was having quite a difficult time. So this particular date I'm going to tell you about was with a guy who I didn't know very well. He was sort of friend of a friend. And we were emailing each other and having delightful emails, you know, just lovely little fun emails. And we decided to meet one day in a pub in Notting Hill in London, fashionable. Mm-hmm. And on the day of the date, this guy emailed me and he said, I'm not feeling terribly well, but, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing you. So I'm going to come out anyway. But just if, you know, if I'm a bit off colour, that's why. I'm just not feeling great. So I was getting ready to go on the date that night and I thought, oh, that's a shame he's not feeling well. And at that time I was in a play where I was playing a nurse, and the cast of the play had, for a novelty opening night present, bought me a PVC nurse's dress, sort of from Anne Summers. You may have seen the type of
thing. I know the sort of thing you mean.
You've seen it in Anne Summers' window.
Exactly.
And as I was looking through my wardrobe to decide what to wear on the date, I saw this PVC nurse's dress and I thought, well, wouldn't it be a bit of fun? Because he says he's not feeling well, I could turn up dressed as a nurse and, you know, that'll be a fun thing. That'll make him see how fun I am. And at this point, I was living on my own, by the way. This is why you must always have a flatmate with you.
To run these ideas past
them.
Oh,
my goodness. Yeah. I mean, just this in my head was a fun idea. But as I got ready, I thought, I put the PVC nurse's dress on over like some tights. And I thought, oh, God, actually, no, that looks a bit like try hard, like I'm trying to look sexy. And I'm not, you know, that's not what I want to convey. I'm just being funny and silly. So I then put some jeans on. So I put this PVC nurse dress on over jeans. And then I put a cardigan on, because there's nothing that tones down sexiness like a cardigan.
No,
right?
It's guaranteed to work.
So I thought, this looks fine. This is great. And it was during the summer, this day. And the I got out of the house, living in Elephant and Castle, South London at the time, and I got on the tube. And I realised once I was on the tube that PVC, very much not a breathable fabric, right? And I'm there in my cardigan, my PVC nurse dress and my jeans on, absolutely sweltering. And by the time I got to the pub, I was sweating like a horse, absolutely drenched. And then I thought, oh God, I can't wear the cardigan. But then I thought, well, if I don't wear the cardigan, then it does look a bit like I'm wearing a PVC nurse's dress anyway. So I went in wearing this cardigan and got into the pub and kind of went, ta-da, look, your nurse has arrived. And this guy looked at me like I'd just shot his dog. You know, like the misjudgment hit me, and I was like, oh no, this was, you know, he just thinks it's weird. He thinks I'm weird. I'm a sweaty woman in a PVC dress. I'm just weird. So anyway, I was a little bit thrown by that, and I'm nervous anyway, generally in life and particularly on dates. So I decided what I'll do is I'll get incredibly drunk, because that will help.
That will help, right.
So I threw back a couple of buckets, you know, the big buckets of wine you get in pubs.
Yeah.
Threw back a couple of those, and then everything seemed to be going so much better. And I was like, actually, do you know what? I've turned this around. This is great. We're having a great time now. This is a really good laugh. And, you know, I'm charming. I'm witty. This is brilliant.
And then, sweating less?
No.
I'm still sweating.
Oh, sweating so much.
Sweating charmingly now.
Glowing.
Yeah.
Is how I would have described it at that point. Time came for us to leave. And we got outside. And he said to me, oh, look, do you want me to take you home? And I was like, oh my goodness, that's a bit forward, but obviously this date's gone very well.
Yeah.
And then we started walking towards the tube, and as the cold air hit me, I kind of realised, oh, hang on, I don't think this date has gone very well, and I don't think that he's found me charming. I think what's happened is I've just been talking about myself drunkenly for the last couple of hours, and I think he's taking me home because he's sort of worried about my safety and my capacity after the amount of wine that I've drunk. And so I started feeling really bad, and I was like, oh God, this is now quite awkward. And we sat on the tube, complete silence, and then he walked me back to my flat, and I said, oh look, why don't you come in just for a coffee. I know nothing's going to happen. I know, look, this has been a bit of a disaster, but look, just come up for a coffee, we can have a chat, and then yeah, you know, you can go on your way.
Yeah.
So bless him, he came up for a coffee and I made him a coffee. And then I went off to the bathroom because I thought, I've got to get this bloody PVC nurse's dress off because I am in sort of in distress now.
Yeah.
And it looks ridiculous. So I went into the bathroom, I got changed, and I came back out and he'd gone.
Oh.
I know, and I thought, oh, well, you know, fair enough. It's been a really weird night. And but it's a shame because, I really liked him, and I just mucked it up. I mucked it up by getting drunk, and I was so rueful that I thought, oh, do you know what, I'll phone him. So I phoned his mobile phone and it went straight to answering machine. I thought, well, he's probably got back on the tube now, so I'll leave a message. So I started leaving a message, but I was still a bit tipsy. And so the message, I was like, oh God, hi. I'm really sorry about the way our date went tonight because, you know, it was just, I was nervous because I really like you. And so I know I got too drunk, and it's just the kind of thing that I do, really, because I'm just a bit of a mess at the moment, and I was just sort of hoping that something might go right for once, but I suppose it hasn't. And I put the phone down and then immediately went, oh my God, what have I've left that message on his phone. And I was standing there beating myself about the head going, oh no, you idiot, when I realised he was still there.
What?
Yeah. He'd gone into the kitchen to put his coffee cup away when I'd come out of the bathroom.
Oh, no.
And it's only a tiny, it was a studio flat, tiny. And while I was leaving the message, he was there.
Quietly standing there.
Just observing.
Not wanting to interrupt.
No. No.
Probably working out, could he get to the exit?
Just
unnoticed.
Poor, terrified man. And, you know, he left.
Quite soon after?
Very, very soon after that.
I mean, I really thought the vinyl nurse's dress with the cardigan, that was, you know, the thing you wanted to confess to.
Yeah.
But leaving a message on his phone while he's listening and you're crying.
And I mean, and just thinking that exists and that he, you know, did he ever listen to it? Did he just delete it straight away? Or did he play it to anyone else?
Were there any more dates with this gent?
No.
No. Did you hear from him again?
No. No.
Did you? When he left, you didn't leave another message for him, did you?
Oh, the temptation. In fact, you know what? I think I might have texted him. I think I probably did.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you so much for sharing that confession. To me, it seems all you seem to have done wrong is have a occasionally disastrous love life.
Yeah.
Who hasn't turned up to a date in inappropriate amounts of PVC?
Well, I mean, we have all done it, Stephen.
We have. So, Lucy, I believe you have one more confession for me.
So we are coming bang up to date, Stephen, with my last confession, mm-hmm. which is it has to do with my husband.
Oh.
And is something I'm concealing from him.
Oh.
And I'll go straight to it. It's that I have lost my wedding and engagement rings.
Oh.
Hmm. He doesn't know.
He doesn't know.
Well, I say he doesn't know. He probably suspects.
Right.
Because one of the sort of sources of tension in our marriage, which is, I would argue otherwise, a very happy marriage. But I do argue it's a happy marriage with Justin, who claims it's not. But I think we get on very well. And I finally have found someone who is as awkward and weird as me. And I am delighted
to
have found him. But he does not understand why I lose things all the time. I cannot keep hold of possessions at all. It's always been the case for me. I live somehow on the threshold of an alternate dimension. And into that alternate dimension, objects fall through no fault of my own. So I can be carrying something mm-hmm. and it will disappear.
Right.
And Justin assumes that I have lost it, whereas I know that what has happened is that it has been sucked
right
into an alternate dimension. And it can happen incredibly quickly. So
you're not losing anything here.
I'm not. I'm completely blameless.
But
the stuff is going.
Yeah. There must be another explanation.
It's clearly not me.
Yeah.
So we've had all kinds of shenanigans over the years. I lost the keys to the car at the beach once. That was another memorable day out.
Okay.
I had driven on that particular occasion and we had a lovely picnic on the beach with the kids. And at the end, we're packing up to go. Justin says, "Where are the car keys?" And I could not find them.
No.
And by this time, we'd just got to the car. So then we had to walk back to the beach. We were digging on the beach where we thought we'd been sitting. It was very hard to tell. And then other people joined in.
Oh,
so it
wow.
became this big South End treasure hunt for our keys. No sign of them. And then about an hour we'd been looking, I suddenly said to Justin, I went, "Oh gosh, you know, when I packed up the picnic rubbish, I might have dropped them into the bin." And Justin went off and came back covered in bin juice, swatting away wasps and dangling the car keys.
Oh, what a hero.
Not a word was said.
No.
But it was a very frosty drive home.
Well, let's not forget this is about your wedding ring, your engagement ring.
Yeah.
But just so we might gauge how Justin will react when he hears this on the radio. How does he feel about that day at the beach and the keys? Does he find it funny now?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you're in quite a lot of trouble.
Oh, huge trouble. It's one of those things that is only going to get worse the longer we stay married. And I mean, lockdown was no picnic in that regard either, because even in a house where we couldn't leave, I still lost things. I mean,
I'm starting, the back of my knees are starting to sweat with anxiety.
Oh, I know.
Why did you take your rings off your... I don't want to sound like a spouse.
Why did
you take the rings off?
Yeah,
can you remember?
I do. No, absolutely remember. It was because my little fingers had got a bit chubby.
Oh, okay.
So the wedding and engagement ring no longer fitted. But
right.
I did replace them. So I went to Argos and I got a copy, a sort of basically, you know, a silver ring and a silver ring with a little stone in it.
Okay.
Which
sort of substitute losable, possibly losable if it had to.
Yes, exactly. That, you know, knowing that I lose things, actually it was quite a relief because
right.
I'd managed to keep my wedding and engagement ring up until that point. So this is about 5 years into our marriage. So I've kept them for 5 years, which is very good going. Given that I do take them off sometimes, as you know, if you act.
Yes.
You sometimes play a single person.
You sometimes do, yeah.
So you take your rings off or at yoga.
Right.
I sometimes take my rings off.
So you can pull?
So that the very hot yoga instructor doesn't know I'm married. I mean, you know.
Yeah.
So standard. Sue me. But yes.
So what happened to the Argos substitute rings? So the
Argos
rings?
Substitute rings got lost
they
because
got lost.
I took them off at
okay.
yoga.
I kind of knew that. I sort of felt that was coming. Yeah.
No, I mean, they were always going to get lost.
Was Justin upset about that?
Well, he didn't notice for ages and ages
ages. So you might have some time yet.
Yeah, he's not an observant man.
Okay.
And slow we've been married long enough that we barely look at each other now. Okay.
Your fingers disgust me.
Yeah, look at your thing. Even the way you hold a pen makes me sick.
How long have you been married?
Well, I mean, 11 years.
Okay.
It's not that long.
You've had a good innings. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying this is going to end it, but... Okay, so he eventually noticed those substitute rings had gone.
Eventually did and said, oh my God, you've lost your wedding and engagement ring. To which I said, no, I haven't.
Right.
I have lost a fake engagement wedding ring. Yeah, so he knows those rings have disappeared.
Right.
But what he doesn't know is that the original ones that I took off, I put them in, well, I think I put them in a bag of like hair clips.
Right.
Because it was
obviously.
It was in my bedside table, but it wasn't like an obvious. So I thought, well, they're in my bedside table, but it's not like obvious if someone broke in.
Burglars, right.
Yeah, then
so
they
bag
think
it's
just a bag of hair clips. But then we are moving house, and
right.
so I've been tidying up.
Oh, God.
That's my best guess, because that bag of hair clips is no longer there, and I'm pretty sure that was where I put it, and I'm pretty sure that I got rid of them.
But, I mean, maybe all these things will just turn up at once. The wedding rings, the original car keys, your twins...
that would be amazing. And all the records that I lost from my 16th birthday.
Yes, and some scouts and your relationship with your older sister.
These are all things I'm desperate to get back. And if you can make that happen, Stephen,
I mean,
just through this show.
What are the chances of Justin actually listening to this show? Does he listen to your stuff?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, you've been an absolute delight, and I appreciate your openness and your honesty. And
I appreciate you hearing my confession. It's been really very cathartic.
Excellent. And Justin's a big fella, so don't send him round my way. I know nothing about this.
He'll never listen to this.
He'll never listen. Okay. Lucy Porter, thank you so much for visiting the confessional.
Thank you.
This was a 7 Digital production for BBC Radio 4 with some extra jokes by Nick Doody. The programme was devised with Dave Anderson and produced by Frank Sterling. Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Mangan has left the confessional.
And you can hear episodes